Hi, this is a Gabriel's, and today we'd like to address a reader question from Rick, who asked us, Douglas, you have that question in front of you?
Well, the question was so beautifully put. I don't have it in front of me. It was read to me by his good friend, Doug, who came to visit us, and it was in a great question. So we wanted to answer the question, and so I'll frame it in a way that people can understand it. So basically, this person, Rick R., you know who you are, and Doug R., you know who you are, and you good folks over at the IHS, all of you, because you're all such sweethearts. And today I was told that some of you listen to a number of our stuff. So I'm giving a shout out because I love it when Doug comes to visit us because he can fill me in on the good work that's going on there. And it's truly a Christian ministry, a very, very beautiful thing going on. So the question was, the person, Rick, we almost met with not long ago, and he says, oh, I wish I could have been there because I'd asked this question. Why do you say, and it's a great question, because I was just thinking this very thought, and I was thinking, you know, I think I might confuse people. And so it dawned on me, I should make a clarification of this, and then this question comes. And the question is, what's the difference between, we have a geopolitical side, and I have a name, Thomas Paine in the Ass of the Globalists. Well, that's a different globalism than Rudolf Steiner talks about. So when we're talking anthroposophy and globalism, there must be a clear distinction. So one could actually say that on one hand, the globalists are a very extreme left progressive group that has been led by the British secret societies that Rudolf Steiner describes in his three lectures on imperialism. And then on the other hand, you can say that Rudolf Steiner speaks of a universalism. When he speaks of the globe or the globe working together, he's actually speaking about the future, when it will happen. But right now it won't happen. And so when he's speaking of, for instance, even the threefold social order, and I had a lovely talk with Doug about the threefold social order and the way that it manifests in anthroposophy in America. And unfortunately, there's not too many groups that are able to carry it through. And why is that? Because they don't have the Christianity, they don't have the love in their hearts for people who are not like themselves to be able to carry off community. Now, this is true except for a few communities that I know in America, and I used to travel around to communities just to see how this worked. And what I could see is there wasn't the love. There wasn't. So when the Christians in the early days had this complete Christian communal family relationship, well, that was because they were overlighted, of course, by the Christ. And so we can be overlighted if we all gather underneath that same banner. But if we don't, then what happens is you have what they would call nationalism. But remember, there's two types of nationalism. One is patriotic, the other one is fascism. So how about the National Socialist Movement in Germany? That was nationalism that said that the Aryans were greater than all other races. Same thing happened in Britain with the British imperialism. They believed that the white English-speaking race should rule the rest of the races because they are so much more highly evolved than everyone. This type of ethnocentrism, this type of nationalism is very, very bad because it's led into World War I, World War II, and many other wars. But when it comes down to it, we need to have diversity and accept all diversity, but to keep it distinguished. Why? Because same thing with, say, the whole universe, the cosmos. We are, one could say, a 3D holographic representation of the cosmos. Well, that's what every human being is. And so every human being should be a global citizen, should be a universal citizen who is not bound by race or color or creed or religion or anything else or family or any of those ties. As a matter of fact, Rudolf Steiner is the greatest mind for diversity that there ever was. And the reason we invented, one of the reasons we invented neo-anthroposophy is because I said, I will not debate with anyone about Rudolf Steiner being a racist because that would just show that they haven't read his work enough to see that he is anything but a racist. So he said that in the future, we would all become bronze colored. We would all mix so beautifully together in America in this melting pot that later, not now, but later, once the Russians lead us for a while in the next era, we'd call it, after that would be the American time. And when we at that time come to the fore of development, then we will all be this beautiful mixed race, which everyone will be there. But let's think for a second. What is racism? Rudolf Steiner made it perfectly clear that it doesn't matter who you think you are from one incarnation to the next. You may be someone very highfalutin in the most advanced civilization now, and in your next incarnation, you may be a pygmy or you may be a cannibal. Because remember that there are people living on this earth who, if you looked at them, you would think that they were back in Neolithic times. So we have concurrently happening on the earth every type of imaginable condition of evolution spiritually. And you don't know when you're going to fall back, when you're going to backslide. So this time you might just be a dandy person. But if you blow it, next time you might have to really kind of start again. So, you know, we're... And I want to also state that when we started Neo-Anthroposophy, it has now become ultra clear that those anthroposophists who've been able to stick with us over the years and are so appreciative of our work and tell us so and read our books and all this stuff, because we're just trying to help. The reason we said Neo-Anthroposophy, so we wouldn't have to get into the cult of the personality or try to defend Steiner as a racist or try to defend Steiner as a non-Nazi or all this complete nonsense. I'm not going to debate that. I'm going to debate his work. I'm going to debate what he gave us as his indications, because none of us got to meet him. I got to meet lots of people who knew him, so I got to ask lots of questions of them, but I didn't get to meet him, so I don't know. So what we really have is kind of a extreme left and right group of anthroposophists. And what is so, so sad is what you see happening to Dornach. I'm looking at a picture of the Gertianum right now, the second Gertianum, and here it is. I'm looking at the concept that Judith von Halle, who says she can time travel and that she knows better than Rudolf Steiner about the life of Christ and so on and so forth, as she quotes Anne Catherine Emmerich and says that she has stigmata and so on and so forth. Well, what is that? That is the extreme left, isn't it? That is progressiveness that has gone back into a neo-spiritualism, and it's just so sad.
For me personally, that experience of seeing that side of anthroposophy as a young anthroposophist was very luciferic. I didn't feel comfortable around the radical liberals that had come into the anthroposophic society. And that's why I left, and why I am very appreciative of the people who have followed us through our geopolitical work.
Yes, and I think that's what Doug and I were talking about today, is the sad condition of some of the people who are some of the leaders, literally, for the national, international movement for anthroposophy. And, you know, it was very, very sad, because basically Sergei Pogoviev and Peter Selge wrote a book, and they basically indicated that the second Gertianum is now simply a tomb for the unnamed anthroposophist. That you can go there and you won't even see Rudolf Steiner's name. And there's one picture of him in a back hall. And it's the picture Steiner said you can't post, because he did it when he was in a trance state. And so they posted the worst thing they could in a back hall that the second Gertianum. You have to look at the leadership. The Anthroposophic Society in America, you have to look at the leadership. And what you find is some people on the far progressive side tend to really, and I'm sorry to have to say it, believe that people like Hillary Clinton should be our leaders, that a Bill Clinton should be our leader, that a Joe Biden or anybody that he chooses as a vice president
because
should be
they
our leader.
But they haven't looked deep enough into the issues to realize that by supporting those kinds of folks, you are walking humanity off a cliff of extermination, of a genocide. And, you know, the typical liberal, especially the educated ones that we see here in Ann Arbor, will reject that right off. They don't want to look at it. So that's why it was best for us to move our approach to another place and give it another name, so that we just didn't have to get involved with that. And we call it Neo-Anthroposophy.
And really that cropped up because of Facebook and because of so many people on the anthroposophical sites with the name Anthroposophy on it, or Rudolf Steiner, who would bash Rudolf Steiner just mercilessly. So I would then defend him and I'd get into all these arguments with these trolls. And it turned into something where I said, okay, look, I'm not going to defend your version of anthroposophy. I'm simply going to be a neo-anthroposophist and quote Steiner. And if I'm not quoting Steiner, then I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to speculate now. And I don't like to speculate too much, but so we can look at some of this stuff and we can say, okay, so there was a need to have a middle ground because you have the far left with the people who literally sunk back into spiritism with Judith von Halle, or you have the far right where you have people who became such legalists that they ripped the curriculum to pieces with their lawsuits. And trying to determine what Rudolf Steiner was indicating in terms of the foundation of the Anthroposophical Society at the Christmas Foundation meeting. And so then they debate, and then you get people debating on the right and left, and people forget the middle. And the middle is what Rudolf Steiner really did with his heart. And that can't be taken away. And no matter, and I can quote the names of these people, but I won't, because I won't give them enough dignity to quote it, that the people who bash Rudolf Steiner saying he's a Nazi or he's a racist or he's a this and that, they simply haven't done their homework. And they are on the far right. And so you can go into the library, you can go into the bookstore at the Goetheanum now, and second Goetheanum, and what will you find on the shelf? Entire sets of books that criticize Rudolf Steiner. Improperly, by the way, with incorrect quotes out of context and you name it. Those books are there. Isn't that amazing? But you won't find some of the more insightful anthroposophical writers because they don't carry those authors. And then you find that, unfortunately, some of the many of my dearest friends who were on the Vorstand, the Central Committee of Dornach, they're no longer there and they've left. And in a way, I think that they had to get away from the hollowness and the hypocrisy that can be seen on the far left and the far right. So, if you are going to determine who you are spiritually by your political leanings based upon the lies that politics tell you and politicians tell you, then you are not on solid ground. So what we saw was that there needed to be a new way to simply basically summarize and present Rudolf Steiner in a way that makes it digestible and palatable for everyone who listens to it or who comes across it. So that's why we've done so many intelligence reports, what we call them on the geopolitical side. On the other side, we just call them a neo-anthroposophy or the side for ourspirit.com. That's just articles. And those articles are to help people. And in almost every article, you will get more Steiner quotes than anything that I'm telling you. And if I'm saying it, I'm simply repeating what is you're going to find in the Steiner quotes. And what I found was when I was on Facebook, I got on and I found people bashing Steiner. And so I bashed them back. And then I would say, okay, that's it. To straighten out their misunderstanding of that, I'm going to write an article. So I'd write an article. And then it would make so many of the trolls so mad that I'd get into arguments with them, basically, where thousands of responses to one single article. And then eventually some of the trolls gave up and some of the people went away. And and I got kicked off one site, which was really funny because I told them I'd stay there and I'd defend Steiner until the day I die or they'd have to kick me off. Well, they eventually kicked me off for something I don't even know what it was for, nonsense. Nothing I did. And so what I'm attempting to do now with Neo-Anthroposophy with my beautiful wife, Tyla, is to simply take what we've learned in all of these years as being Waldorf teachers and students of Anthroposophy and try to give it out in a new form that leaves behind the cult of the personality.
Well, I don't understand why people give us such pushback. We don't ask for any money from the society and never would. We've been to their location in Ann Arbor, the North American location. I'm just so sad to see how run down it is. that shows a lack of commitment on the membership as a whole. And why is that? Why are members not willing to commit? They won't look at that. All you have are some people at the top that have their special caches of money that they use to spend on themselves and for the betterment of their own learning. But where does it go in the society? And where does the membership money go to take care of an old house in Ann Arbor without any vision of what the future should look like, just at a time in history when people around the world need answers for where this threshold experience we are all having, where parents around the world are looking for homeschool options, where anthroposophists could be stepping up and offering Waldorf solutions, both microschooling or even in homeschooling platforms, but there is a silence. Then you get that guy, you know, that guy that writes that letter, you know, and it's so stilted and it's so out of touch with what's really going on. So we're going to do our own thing. Y'all do your thing over there in anthroposophy land. We're going to do our own thing. We're not going to ask you for anything, but we're going to grow our movement and it's going to be vibrant. And we invite everybody to join us.
And Rudolf Steiner, as he was getting older at his last years of his life, he focused on the young, the youth. And he gave the youth course and he gave a number of courses. And he basically said that there almost needs to be a separate anthroposophical society. So he started what was called the youth section. And inside of that is an esoteric group called the Circle, the Youth Circle. And of course, I've joined everything. And in the old days, they all thought that I was a good person. And so I got taken into all these different groups and got to meet all these amazing anthroposophists. And you know, those people are great, but the people who tout anthroposophy now are oftentimes just hollow sounding. And that's the problem. So what life is there in the anthroposophical society that comes out of the youth? Who is doing, yes, there's youth conferences, and sometimes the anthroposophic youth conferences in Dornach are really awesome. And of course, I've been involved in some of those over the years. Over the many years. And we have to find a new lifeblood in anthroposophy. And that isn't going to come by the old methodologies. For instance, remember when Rudolf Steiner had, he wasn't a member of the Anthroposophic Society. And he didn't have a card. And the door had to be locked, according to the right-wing anthroposophists who wouldn't let anybody in to hear his lectures. And one time, you know, they wouldn't let in Walter Johannes Stein. So Rudolf Steiner says, well, then I'm not going to give the lecture if you don't let him in. So they immediately wrote him a card and let him in. So, you know, Rudolf Steiner himself was in the middle ground. He wasn't into Spiritism, or he wasn't into the theosophy of Besant, Annie Besant, who took over for H.P. Blavatsky and the Theosophical Society. He wasn't into all of, I could go on and on and on, all these different groups that came to him. You know, the OTO and Theodore Roos and all that stuff. So he was into all of that, but he always found the middle way. And that's what we're trying to do, is find the middle way. So when we say globalism, when Steiner says globalism, we want to make it perfectly clear that he's talking about the future and about universalism and about what he said would be necessary, the threefold social order coming to manifestation before this type of globalism or universalism, which is, again, the sixth epoch, that he was speaking of. He wasn't speaking of now. For instance, where do you see that nations are refraining from war, except for Trump being one of the first presidents ever not to be manipulated by the people around him to get into war? War has been the constant feeding of our economic system since any of us can remember. So what is it that causes war? That somebody thinks that somebody else is different than them, or that they have something they want, or that the boundary needs to be different, or that they're just going to be mean and steal and take, covetousness. This is common. This is following the seven deadly sins. So why can't we stop it? Because we have yet to develop as, Gandhi once said, I believe in Christianity, I just haven't met a Christian. And that's exactly it. Who is living the true life of Christianity? Who is giving up of themselves and considering other people's needs before they consider their own? That type of Christianity I've found very rarely in any type of community or any type of efforts. And so when it comes to the threefold social order, remember he finally said that it needed to just go into a rest and that it would be appropriate that once there were enough Waldorf schools, and he gave all kind of indications about what that would mean, how many Waldorf schools and what would have to take place, that the threefold social order could come back. He tried it to bring it into Europe, and it was rejected. And if you don't know about that, we'd read Walter Johannes Stein's work on the way that he was working with Rudolf Steiner on that in his book, he wrote The Ninth Century. And so Rudolf Steiner tried to get the threefold social order into an operative political movement, and they worked really, really hard on it. And then eventually it more or less kind of folded into the Waldorf movement until the education of children could reach a certain saturation point that the threefold social order could be enacted. And that's the problem. Who can do the threefold social order? Very few. I can say that Doug, my friend who was just here, and what he does with the IHS and some of his friends, and they give to each other in this community based upon what is the greatest need for the greatest good. And that is so opposite of American materialism. And so when we start to see true Christianity coming into some of the Camp Hill communities, again, based upon Rudolf Steiner's work, or some of the, for instance, Beaver Run, Pennsylvania, or Copaic, or the Kimmerton Farms, and the way that they work with special education students and challenged adults, that's the true Christianity. But there's very few of those communities in the entire world. So if you think for 1 minute that the nonsense of the United Nations globalism and one world order that George H.W. Bush preached, that Lord Malik Brown preached, that Jeffrey Paddy preached, that is preached from the Privy Council and the British imperialist, that is preached by the Pilgrim Society and the Council on Foreign Relations, and all of them preach globalism. We are not ready for globalism. Anyone who's preaching globalism, look closely. In most cases, they want globalism for everyone but them. It is for their own self-aggrandizement. It is for their own self-enrichment that they want globalism. For instance, the ex-head of Britain makes more money teaching globalism to third world countries than anyone has ever imagined. People charge millions and millions and millions and tens of millions of dollars to teach countries to become globalists when there is no such thing. The United Nations has no united front. They're not united in anything. They're at odds in everything. The Security Council seldom ever agrees, and it's set up that way. Why would we give communist China, communist Russia, a veto unless the people who created communist China and communist Russia, the British, had that as their plan to basically destroy America's resistance against their British dominance? We are not a vassal of Britain. We are not part of the Commonwealth. They don't seem to know that. And they use the United Nations to control us, and their Pilgrim Society shows that we have many, many treacherous, treasonous, seditious traitors amongst the people in Washington, D.C., at the highest levels of the federal government, in the senior executive service and otherwise, that have sold out to the Brits quite consciously, and that the Brits from the beginning, remember the British started the CIA, it was called the OSS, which was just an American version of their secret service, and basically MI5, MI6, General Communications Headquarters, and all of the work of Five Eyes is a subversion of America. It is basically an attack upon our sovereignty. We need to end all associations with the intelligence agreement called Five Eyes, where the British get to look in on us, because they're certainly not ready for globalism. They are the ones who actually have the coronavirus patent. Coronavirus 19 has a patent. Well, you can't patent nature. So therefore, this patent has to be from a man-made virus, period. You cannot patent a natural influenza. You cannot patent anything in nature. That's not legal. So if Purbright Institute had a patent, these globalists, these British imperialists, they had a patent on coronavirus 19. That means that it was man-made, and it is man-made, and it's well-known so for those who've actually looked at the true research. But that's how I make a lot of enemies in neoanthroposophy, is speaking the truth of our moment. But what did Rudolf Steiner tell us to do? He said our first duty as a Waldorf teacher is to become aware of everything going on in the child's environment and be able to digest it and give it to the child in a digested form. So therefore, if you're left or right, please don't be a Waldorf teacher. You need to be Christ-centered in the middle, and you need to be able to see the left and the right and all stages in between, the full spectrum of humanity, if you're going to teach a Waldorf classroom, because he said that teaching the Waldorf classroom the same children from first through eighth grade was one of the last surviving paths of initiation spiritually for those who wish to do so. Well, how many people take up that challenge? There are, you can use the Christmas conference and the Foundation Stone meditation using its rhythms. He said that was a form of initiation. But there are very few forms of initiation left to us in this world. But humanity right now, because of globalism and because of the development of technology and the attacks upon humanity, particularly electromagnetic frequency attacks on humanity, pharmaceutical attacks on humanity, environmental attacks on humanity, we have been pulled across the threshold, and now humanity is witnessing its own doubles and its own doppelganger and its own unresolved karma rising up to meet us everywhere. And this is the need of a true anthroposophist, is to be able to integrate into the world. Rudolf Steiner said the three forms of initiation, the northern form, the middle form, and the southern form. The northern form would go out into the world and would say, I wish to find that area of livingness behind the physical world that could show me the spirit. Well, that's very noble, but it's very hard to do. But right now, because we're across the threshold, if you look closely, you'll see the manifestation of the spirit in all aspects of science. They're discovering things every single day that are the footprints of the spirit. So that's one form. That's the northern form. The southern form is to go within yourself and, like a mystic, again and again and again, try to find the whole world in yourself through initiation. Use yourself, your inner self, as the cave of initiation that goes into the underworld that can help you look at your own double and doppelganger and resolve that. That's the southern form of initiation. But the middle form of initiation is through a direct contact and communion with the being of the Son, of Christ, who works through the Son, Christ. Or through our higher self, of course, and our guardian angel and all the beings that we've described so many times that are there to help us deal with crossing the threshold into the spiritual world, whether it be through meditation or through initiation or at the moment of death. So, Rick, thank you for pointing out that I have not made clear that Rudolf Steiner was not referring to the globalism that is referred to today, or the New World Order, and or neither was he ever. Never will you find that he says, right now we are ready to do that. And all those indications that he gives, he doesn't put a time factor on them, because he's rather a timeless being in his perspective. In speaking of one united humanity, is in the future. But for those who are spiritually awakened, of course, they're working on that now. But the dilemma is the following. The dilemma is, in this fifth epoch, we are to acknowledge evil. We are to see evil. We are to call out evil. We are to face evil on the left, evil on the right, Lucifer and Ahriman. We are to face these things with the courage of Christ. And this is the injunction of our age, but of course we must have discernment to be able to do that, and we must have the desire to initiate ourselves, because at this point, no one's going to be there to help you except to study those who've done it before. like Rudolf Steiner. And so if you wish to be initiated in this age and you wish to really be a true universal globalist and pray for everybody and really believe that that is the path for you now, that's okay too. And some people are that evolved. But here's the deal. If you're that evolved, then you're so close to being an angel that you won't be here much longer now, will you? And so those people, as we debated today, the construct that there are people in this evolution who are not going to go from human to angel. They're going to go from human to animal, or they're going to stay a human. And this is the nature of the human being. This is why globalism can't take place. This is why Christianity can't manifest at this moment, because there aren't enough evolved beings to do so. But what Rudolf Steiner did say in terms of encouragement is that if there are four groups of 12 or 48 people in the world who actually have that sense of what the universalism of, well, he didn't say that specifically. He said if there are four groups of 12 who hold basically the content of anthroposophy and or, you know, the higher spiritual wisdom that we can gain through the being of anthroposophia, if there are 48 of those people, they will keep the earth together, and the earth will not simply, as he said, at this time, we would have the chance to end human development and end human evolution. And now we're seeing that a lot of that is coming forth. But that's not what's going to happen, because certainly there are 48 people. There are way more than 48 people. As a matter of fact, there is a burgeoning of incredible spiritual awakening, and all of the great beings are incarnated now. So from the Kalki Avatar to the Maitreya Buddha to all these different beings, they are all here now.
But the 48 is important, because this is why we are doing the work we're doing. After we had written the Gospel of Sophia series and the other books that are on our bookshelf, we looked in the internet and we saw that there are a lot of people who didn't understand what was going on in the world. They haven't been educated. They were taught propaganda history. And so as anthroposophists, first class anthroposophists, we thought that was a very important thing to do, is to put this work out into the world. We have worked every single day since the day that we actually met. And now we see a global movement. It's so exciting, Douglas.
And it doesn't need a society to hold it.
Nope.
It doesn't need a building.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't need anything. It doesn't need books. All it needs is the following: humans communicating with each other through conversation. What does Goethe say in The Green Snake and the Beautiful Lily? What is greater than gold? Light. What is greater than light? Conversation. And that's what I had today with my dear friend Doug, and what I wish I could have had with my dear friend Rick, who sent us that good question. But the deal is, if you can converse with someone and get out of your own self and listen to someone else, that's where spiritual development actually happens. And you can self-initiate yourself by going in as a mystic. You can try to self-initiate yourself by looking into the outer world and seeing the footprint of the spirit. But when it comes down to it, it is the loving, compassionate relationships that we have with others that are eternal, that we take into the spiritual world. And that is what makes us a true globalist or a true universalist.